Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 110. I am Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in for David Todd on this Monday, May the 16th, is Alex Cazorra once again. Alex, happy Monday, and I'm coming to you live from Las Vegas, Nevada.
You got to give me some good tips out there. You got to give me my bookie or something now, Dave. Come on, you got to help me out. You're in the land of it.
Yeah, I've moved out of here to be closer to my money, because that's where it seems last couple of years, that's where a lot of my money has gone to. But we left Florida last Monday, and of course took a couple of days to drive across country, and what an experience that was, I'm here to tell you. I could dedicate a whole podcast to that alone, but I'm sure I'll spare people by not doing that. But we arrived on Thursday, last Thursday, and still trying to get settled. The rest of our stuff will get here on Wednesday of this week. And on top of having a sick dog and trying to we are sleeping on inflatable mattresses. Really, that doesn't matter to me much, being as I don't sleep much. But my wife certainly is not enjoying that right now. It's been some organized chaos, but we'll get through it. We knew this kind of stuff was coming. The big thing is that I've got one of the Steelers Depot Megaplex computers back online, so I'm able to at least do some work and help you out, and I appreciate all the hard work you did during the week or so that I missed there, and I know the listeners and readers appreciate that as well.
Yeah, no problem. I know you don't want to talk about your trip too much, but you got to give me – did you find one good place to eat? Was there ever a hole in the wall you went to on your cross country? Were any good eateries on your journey?
Well, I got to be honest. When you have a dog in the car, you're not eating out.
That's true.
So, and plus, he was sick. The biggest thing with him is it looks like he's becoming diabetic now. On top of him having Cushing's, so because of that, he drank a lot of water on the trip. So we were basically pulling over every hour and a half to help accommodate him. But no, we ate sandwiches along the way and drove, and I did all the driving on top of that. So the good thing about it was I had Sirius satellite radio, so you know I was able to listen in on the NFL news, and my wife was able to pay attention to Fox News, so that made her happy as well.
How many hours is that drive? Is that a 20-hour drive or something?
Yeah, 20-something-plus hours, wow. And I think the longest day driving for me was something like 13 or 14 hours, and I think we covered like 800 and something miles or something on that day. I will tell you this, there's nothing to see along the interstate in New Mexico.
Breaking news thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Now Arizona, you got the Rocky, you know, you got some mountainous and the inclines and that, you know, that kept your eyes busy. And, there were quite a few, white, windmills along the side of the road, I think coming out of Texas and on into New Mexico and all like that. But once you get into to Nevada, the terrain keeps your eyes busy. So yeah, I gotta admit, Alex, it wasn't as boring of a drive as I thought it would be. Now of course it takes forever to get through Texas, but once you get out of Texas, the trip pretty much seemed to go quickly.
Last question for you, real quick: what is the Las Vegas Walmart like?
They have a couple of them I've unfortunately been to already, and they are a lot busier at 2 a.m. I don't stick out so much in the a.m. I might have to start going to Walmarts at like 6 or 7 a.m. in the morning or something like that. But in fact, my wife had to already make another trip back over there as we currently speak to pick up Toby some insulin that was prescribed for him to this morning here. But enough about Dave's Vegas vacation trip, which is a permanent vacation. Hope to be here for quite a while as well. I think we should probably get to talking a little bit about some news and notes from the Steelers in the NFL. And thankfully, we had something to write about that's already generating quite a few comments on this Monday morning. And we'll start on these two topics and, of course, work backwards to talking about some observations that came out of Steelers rookie minicamp and all. But let's start things off by talking about the Carolina Panthers releasing cornerback Brandon Boykin on Monday morning. And if you don't view that as a surprise, I can't find a person that doesn't view that as a surprise. A, because I mean, the guy signed a minimum salary benefit contract, and what that means is really all they had was $80,000 invested in him and with a decreased salary cap charge. And even though they had pulled the franchise tag out from Josh Norman and lost him a few weeks ago, they went ahead and drafted three cornerbacks during the 2016 NFL draft. But even all that added together, there's something here that we don't know about, that has led to this release. Because let's face it, for the price and the experience that that Boykin has and was costing the Panthers, it would still make every sense. It would make sense to hold on to him at least through training camp.
Yeah, I don't have a good explanation for it, but I think at the same time we recognize that he came in on a veteran minimum deal, which tells you about what the Panthers valued him as. And so, generally, if a player gets released off a minimum, veteran deal, it's not a big news because their value was considered so low and thought of so low in the first place. But yeah, obviously you're surprised by it to see it happen in May.
But here's the thing though. Okay. If you're normally going to sign a guy like that and cut him this soon, normally A, you're not going to give him even the $80,000 signing bonus.
Right.
And B, it's probably going to be a guy that you probably didn't sign during the meat of free agency. On top of it, and keep in mind that it was still a minimum salary deal.
Yeah.
And a lot has even happened since he was signed by the Panthers. They of course parted ways with Josh Norman, and at that point you're thinking, wow, this guy really might have a chance to play 1 year in Carolina, increase his value, and then sign a big deal. So I guess what I'm getting at here is there's more to this than what we know.
There is, but I'm always hesitant to talk about those things because you're treading on thin ice in my mind about it, and I don't know what's truth and what's fiction. I just don't think he's as good or as valuable as the common fan believes he is.
Okay, but and while you refuse to speculate, I gladly will.
I know you do. Brandon Boykin himself knows you do.
Look, I don't have any inside knowledge on this whatsoever. But if you remember, shortly, right around the time when he was signed by the Panthers, I threw it out on Twitter that, maybe this guy is an ass, for lack of a better word, and I think that's exactly how I put it on Twitter, and insinuating that maybe this guy was a cancer in a locker room, maybe just a bad attitude and a guy you just don't want around your team. He obviously worked his way out of Philadelphia real quick for cheap when you think about it, a fifth round draft pick. Obviously had trouble getting on the field with the Steelers and really wasn't able to do so until later on in the season. You fast forward to this off season and people know the story there. I mean, heck, I had his market value at a lot higher than a minimum value deal. And the Steelers really, a lot of teams, it looks like, passed on that except for the Panthers. And now here we are to see him get released this quick when the Panthers really don't have, for God's sakes, Alex, he was released so they can make room for Shaquille Richardson.
Yeah. I know. It's crazy. I just, you know, if there was an issue with him in the locker room, don't you think there would have been some sort of report by someone, you know, Philadelphia beat writer after he got traded to Pittsburgh, or Pittsburgh guy, or now, you know, Jonathan Jones in Carolina? Those guys all, you know, have a good ear to what's going on, and there's been no report about it. And if you're in Pittsburgh, if you're in Philadelphia and Boykin's gone, you can be freely reporting about it because you don't have to go talk to the guy after. You don't have that conflict of interest and confrontation. So I'm saying there's never been a report about Boykin really being an issue, right?
Right. Exactly. Now, outside of those comments, you know, that he said, she said, I think in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, I think he made some comments about Chip Kelly, but everybody was making comments about Chip Kelly in Philadelphia that got toxic.
Exactly. But, you know, and it might not be him in the locker room per se. It might be just the way he talks to management and coaching staff and bitching and moaning to them.
Yeah, I mean,
you know?
Can kind of tell he might have that, you know, type A personality with kind of things. You know, he took to Twitter after getting released today and, you know, made a couple comments about it. You know, that might not endear yourself to a coaching staff, but it's hard for me to imagine that in May, that alone, when they've barely had a chance to get to know him, is going to get him released. I honestly just think he's not as good as the common fan. Maybe you and I have made him out to be. I don't know.
Yeah, but you're still going to keep him around through training camp, though, right?
This is a Team Carolina that let Josh Norman walk, so they do some different things down there.
Right, but I mean that obviously was signability.
Yeah, but you understand the point is, you know, they do some surprising things with cornerback. Yeah, it was an issue of contracts and all that, but I don't know. I guess I haven't spent a whole lot of time thinking about it, but it was surprising to see.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being utterly shocked. When this news came across, how shocked were you?
I was probably at like an 8 or a 9 because I woke up late today. You know, I like to sleep in a little bit sometimes. You're the early bird. And I saw the message from you. You sent me a message that said, I have the Boykin news. And I just figured it was who knows what. And then I looked at the site right away and the headline was, you know, Panthers released Brandon Boykin. And that was the last thing I was expecting that headline to be, Dave.
You thought I got chapped on Twitter, right?
Yeah, I thought that something happened, or you and Boykin were in the parking lot throwing hands or something. I did not expect it to be that Boykin got released by Carolina. So, yes, I was very surprised by it.
All right. Before, as we don't have to talk about this for the next 4 podcasts, which I'm dying to do.
I know.
And I know the listeners are as well. Chances he winds back up with the Steelers.
I think they're pretty minimal, just because knowing that Boykin was viewed as just a slot guy here, you already have two of those in Pittsburgh, Senquez Golson, you know, William Gay. You know, those are going to be your two guys, Golson presumably the starter, and if something happens with him, Gay would kick inside. But the only thing that's making me say there's really no chance is – you know, after that little Twitter spat you had with Boykin, Boykin seemed to imply that Pittsburgh offered him a contract. Am I correct on that?
One would think.
Didn't he say he took less money to go to Carolina?
Yeah, but he also I doubt seriously it was the Steelers that offered him the $2 million a year.
Okay, so maybe I'm wrong on this because I thought he said it was Pittsburgh, but did he just say that some team? He didn't say it was Pittsburgh?
Right, okay. I don't think he said it was the Steelers. There was the interview during the offseason before he did sign that talked about Mike Tomlin told him in so many words it was in his best interest to look around, mm-hmm. and that if he couldn't find anything to check back with them. And look, we know how the Steelers work in situations like this. There is no way they offered him more than a minimum salary benefit deal, which is exactly what he signed with Carolina. Now, if he had one of those, and that's a big if he had one of those on the table from the Steelers and one of them on the table from the Panthers, I could definitely see why he signed with the Panthers. Mm-hmm. You know, especially when you look at what they had at that time. Right. Even though Josh Norman was on the roster at that time, I was 11 shot on a scale of 1 to 10 because, and like I said, I think there's more. There's something here. Who knows? Maybe in a day or two, he's going to show up on the banned substance, list, or who knows? But there's just something more there. And now I kind of feel vindicated somewhat of all that hell that I caught several weeks ago when I said he might be an ass. And but anyway, now that we've dedicated 20 minutes to the Brandon Boykin Depot podcast. There was some other. Do you have anything else to add on to that so we can really put that to bed?
No, just well, again, I don't know what the problem was. I don't like to speculate about it a ton, but just to put to bed about Pittsburgh is that they have their two nickel corners. If Boykin came in, he'd be the third string nickel. There's not really a role for him. Although I would like to add a veteran corner to give that group a little bit of experience to it. I just don't think Boykin would have a role here, so I don't anticipate him coming back to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and he would if he did, boy, he would have to really be a special teams demon, and that's not really even though he has experience, I mean, it's not in his DNA,
right.
Exactly. Unless you're going to use him as a punt returner,
and I don't think that's going to happen.
And I don't think the Steelers have any hope or won't want to do that. All right, the other bit of news. I kind of turned my head like a dog hearing a dog whistle when this came across Twitter. Zach Mettenberger was released by the Titans Monday morning. Talking about on the shock scale, that would probably rate right there around a 5 or 6 in my eyes. Mm-hmm. It's obvious that Mettenberger is no longer the future in Tennessee. With Mariota there, he's obviously a guy that Wisenhunt was higher on than the rest of that coaching staff. You're talking about a guy that has had his problems. And what does he have? 10 starts? Is it something like that?
He's 0-10 in his career.
0-10 and has a strong arm. I think we both can agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
Football IQ, meh. As far as that goes, but I think he got kind of caught up in a bad situation in Tennessee by him being waived. He is subject to the waiver process. He has 2 years remaining on his rookie contract. I suspect some team's going to claim him off of waivers. You put up in a post this morning, could the Steelers be interested? I think there's a chance.
Mm-hmm.
I guess let me put it to you this way. I would not be surprised if word came out that the Steelers did put in a waiver claim in on Mettenberger. It'd be interesting to see him have an offseason and a training camp to see what he could do, right?
Absolutely. I'm right there with you, Dave. And I posted that article, and I normally don't. And the only time I'll post those could the Steelers have interest, typically at least, is if there's been some sort of report or connection in the past. And as soon as I saw, Dave, that Mettenberger was released, my first thought was, didn't the Steelers have some level of interest in this guy? So I went back in the archives of Steelers Depot and looked, and there was a report by Chris Bradford in March of 2014 that said that one source had told him the Steelers had at least a pretty high level of interest in him. So that was what I was able to gather. So there is a draft connection to Pittsburgh. So that's the reason why I kind of put out there, could Pittsburgh have interest? Although Mettenberger played poorly last year, we understand he was playing in a system not designed for him. It was designed for Marcus Mariota, and Mariota and Mettenberger could not be more opposite. So, with the need for looking for a backup quarterback with experience, although the team, of course, just signed Bruce Gradkowski, I would love to see that competition with Gradkowski and Landry Jones and Mettenberger and just see what kind of cream rises to the top.
I am absolutely with you, and especially look at it this way. You didn't draft a quarterback this year, okay? And a lot of us are thankful that that didn't happen.
Right. Me included.
Right. And on top of that, okay, you got Gradkowski back under contract. I'm fine with that, especially, minimum salary. You don't have a lot invested in Bruce right now. And Landry Jones is entering the final year of his rookie deal.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the team didn't anoint him the number two quarterback after the season ended.
Mm-hmm.
They left it kind of open. And even as we sit here today, We expect Bruce Gronkowski and Landry Jones to battle for the backup job for the remainder of the offseason. I really don't think one has the advantage over the other as we sit here today. So why not? Mm-hmm. Why not bring in a guy like Mettenberger to at least challenge? Who knows? Maybe you get into a position where you're able to release Gronkowski.
Right.
And know that he'll always probably be available to you throughout the season should you need him. And maybe there's enough in with upside with Mettenberger that maybe he can give you 2 years as 2 seasons as a number two. And look, I think the comparisons in some sense of him being compared to Roethlisberger. Now, granted, you're going to draw the line at some point. I mean, you have the big body type, you have the big arm type, you have the not very mobile type. Probably not a great X's and O's guy. But even so, how many times have we heard, even just with the drafting of Gerald Hawkins here recently, mm-hmm. the Steelers talking about that Mettenberger or that LSU kind of runs a pro style offense, mm-hmm. and that a guy like even Gerald Hawkins is used to doing some of the things he'll be asked to do in the NFL. You would think that same thing applies kind of to Mettenberger right. going back a few years at LSU as well too. So I'm with you. It would not hurt my feelings to bring him in and let's see what happens over the remainder of the offseason, because you obviously wouldn't have anything invested with him as far as salary cap dollars go. And go from there.
Right. I mean, Tomlin's exact words in that press conference you referenced a minute ago was, you know, he'll see what his options are. Well, now you have another option to toy around with. So, yeah, if you cut Dustin Vaughn, who's the fourth string quarterback right now, you bring in Mettenberger, you let all three of those guys compete for the number two and number three spot, and then you cut the loser. And you can cut any of those guys, Gronkowski, Landry Jones, Zach Mettenberger, and you're not hurting financially, you're not hurting from a, you know, development and future standpoint. None of these guys are, you know, the most recent draft pick where you have to give them time and they have to make the roster. You know, the competition is great, and you want to see that in training camp. The backup situation is unsettled, so why not add another name to that list?
With all that said now, another team's going to claim him, right?
Probably one of those things where the Steelers put in a claim, but someone ahead of them puts in a claim as well, and they lose out because of the order, the way the NFL works. So, but it would not surprise me in the least to see Pittsburgh at least put a claim in.
I agree, and let me tell you someone that would not shock me, another team that would also put in a claim for him.
Who's that?
Oh, come on. It's easy to guess.
Oh, what, Arizona?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. You know Bruce Arians loves those big, strong-arm quarterbacks.
Yeah, and they have Drew Stanton in the backup, but yeah, it's a third-string guy. Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, so it would not surprise me if he ended up in Arizona. And now, obviously, if another team was to pick up Mettenberger and he not be able to stick, you know, into the regular season, then there's probably something there,
yeah,
right?
Right. Real quick to that Arizona point, the Steelers would be ahead in the waiver order against Arizona, right? They would.
Oh,
yeah, because Arizona went farther. They were in the title game, and Pittsburgh obviously wasn't, so they would be, because it goes by the standings. Correct.
Right. So they should be ahead of them. Now here's something else. Where's Wisenhunt at right now?
Is he in San Diego?
Back in San Diego, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
All right. Now, would it make sense for them to put in a waiver claim on him?
Yeah. And they of course would be ahead of Pittsburgh. Yeah, I would make a lot of sense. So it'll be interesting to see. But my guess is that wild guess, Pittsburgh puts in a claim.
And I think you could make an argument that Miami should put in a claim, mm-hmm. you know, as well. But we'll have to, you know, all this speculation manages to fill up a lot of podcast airtime. But in the meantime, there might not be anything more to talk about when come tomorrow afternoon when it comes to Zach Mettenberger. But we shall see. Mm-hmm. Let's see, what else do we have to talk about on this Monday? Thank God we had those two items to kill some time
with. It's crazy, Dave. The entire week you were gone, the news was dead. Absolutely nothing out there. The second you come back, Brandon Boykin news. It's like the heavens opened up when they give you Brandon Boykin and Zach Mettenberger.
Absolutely. This time of year, not a lot to write about, especially from a news standpoint. And, you know, you don't want to get too early into these camp battle posts. We got plenty of that. You know who's probably the happiest right now is Matthew Marksi, because I bet I bet he's going to have something on Brandon Boykin to run this into the ground on Tuesday morning. Let's rewind now. Now, I was obviously able to keep track of some of the stuff coming out of the Steelers rookie minicamp. And all the news that came out last week, on top of it. But there were a couple, I think, tidbits that came out that were, even though it was football and shorts, that are worth talking about it. So what, if you had to kind of rank the top three nuggets to come out of that rookie minicamp, what would they be?
Well, you weren't around when they signed. Were you around when they signed the tryout guys, the four of them? Were you around?
No, I was on the road.
Okay, I can't get my timeline straight. So let's talk about that really quickly. So they signed, four tryouts, which was an unusually high number. I think it matched the same number of tryout guys they've signed the past, the previous three rookie minicamps. So they were Cameron Stingley, the running back who was in camp last year, Brandon Brown Dukes, who's a running back as well, Marcus Tucker, the wide receiver, and then the veteran of the group, Donald Washington, who was a draft pick by the Chiefs in 2009. So I'll spin the question, I guess, right back to you, Dave. Of those four, and I might know what your answer is, but of those four, who's the most interesting to you of that group?
I would go Stingley.
Okay, Stingley.
And that's probably not what you thought I would say.
I thought you were going to go with Washington.
I just haven't gotten enough time to go back and kind of view what Washington has done on tape.
And I only say Washington. I mean, I don't know much about his game, but I just know, being a draft pick, playing in the NFL, you have that leg up. He posted some impressive, vertical numbers at the combine. He actually still has tied the vertical jump record at the combine, a 45-inch vertical. So just from that standpoint, I thought that it was interesting to give you that veteran depth, I guess, in a sense.
Like I said, I haven't even turned on, gone back and reviewed any of his tape. Mm-hmm. It's been so long. When was he drafted?
2009. He played like 2009 through 2011. So his tape's almost irrelevant now because he's been out of the league so long. He was in the CFL the last 2 years.
Right. And I'm trying to even remember his Ohio State stuff, at this point. Obviously, he would have to be a huge contributor on special teams.
Mm-hmm.
If he's going to make this roster. That's why I kind of put ranks Stingley, because the Steelers, the fact that the Steelers brought back a player, an undrafted player, that even though, they previously had to waive him with an injury, I think he was injured in that Hall of Fame game against Minnesota last year.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they brought him back instead of the thousands of other undrafted running backs out there makes me kind of think that there's something there that they liked.
Clearly, yeah.
And even though I think we would agree that Fitzgerald Toussaint probably has an upper hand on a guy like him, they obviously needed another running back body or two.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think that of those tryout guys, I think he would stand the best chance of surviving.
Yeah, I just going back in training camp last year and watching him, he was so sluggish at the position. There's just no burst, and I get that he's a bigger guy. My thought is that they might kind of make him a fullback, because the only fullback on their roster right now is Roosevelt Nix, and one of the guys they released as part of that corresponding move was Christian Powell, who was a UDFA out of Colorado, who kind of played fullback at Colorado. So my thought is they might kind of push Stingley snaps at fullback, because he has a bit of a blocking background. In that option offense Northern Illinois ran, he was asked to lead block in some cases. So I think that might be his best chance, is to get some versatility and get some reps.
That's a great point. Did you write about that already?
Yes, I did. I think it makes a lot of sense for him to move the fullback from a team and from his personal standpoint.
I must have missed mm-hmm. that in the because damn it, if you didn't write about it, I was going to steal it.
I was hurting for content. I needed something out there, my friend.
That is a great point.
But yeah, go ahead.
And it'll be interesting, I guess, now to kind of watch. As look, we expect Stingley now to stick around at least through the opening of training camp, right?
Yes, I do.
So while you're there in Latrobe, you'll be able to tell us real quick if that's how he's being used. But that would definitely make sense because you only have Roosevelt Nix right now. And if something were to happen, we know how the Steelers do, even though they don't use it a lot, they do like to use a fullback at times still. So that's a great point there. Okay, now outside that we talked about the four tryout guys, which, yeah, I was surprised that many got signed because I really think, wasn't Terrence Garvin? No, I'm trying to remember. Was Terrence Garvin the last guy to actually – get signed after
Stingley last year?
Chisholm? Stingley, what about Chisholm? What was he?
Chisholm was a trial guy last year who did not get signed immediately, but he got signed in training camp after injuries hit. I think it was after the Ross Schuerman Achilles injury. Chisholm got signed last year. Stingley and Mike Thornton were signed as trial guys. In 2013, Terrence Garvin was signed. And I think in 2011 or 2012, there was another name that escapes me right now that was signed as well. So there's been four in the last 3 years, and then this year there were four alone.
Yeah, definitely interesting and something to watch moving forward. That was a nugget that came out of the rookie mini camp. What else caught your eye?
Well, there was the quick write-up by Bob Laviola, Steelers.com, who, of course, was there for the first 2 days of mini camp. The last day, Sunday, is closed off to the media. But he was impressed by cornerback Montel Garner. He says that Garner picked off three passes. And, yes, of course, we're just in shorts. We're in rookie minicamp. It's nothing to get too crazy about. But it's a guy making splash plays. And to get noticed, you got to make some big plays. So I thought, you know, while he's in that same boat as Donald Washington, while you're kind of that real long shot, Garner's working on a futures deal right now. In terms of rookie minicamp information, that might be the biggest actual news of who performed well out there.
And he will definitely. I mean, he's been a guy that has been, on the roster a little while now. So it'll be interesting to watch, because when you look at the bottom, I hate to keep going back to this, but it's so obvious. I mean, he is definitely going to have to battle a guy like Duran Grant for what would that be, the fifth or sixth cornerback spot?
Yeah, it'd be the fifth spot.
And can we see them keeping more than five corners?
Well, that was actually going to legitimately be my next question to you. Are they going to keep five or six? If they keep six, then the door's wide open. If they keep five, somebody has to bump Duran Grant off.
Now, obviously, the good thing about this is you've got a draft pick in Sean Davis that gives you a lot of position flexibility. The thing is, are they going to keep four safeties or five safeties with and who we know who the fifth safety would likely be, right?
Mr. Ventrone.
Right. And that's only because of his special teams play.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it gets back to 10 total defensive backs, right?
I have to go back through the previous, additions of the roster, but yeah, I think that's the nice number to put on at 10. So you're either looking at 5 and 5, 5 corners, 5 safeties, or 6 and 4.
So there is – you could create a path for a guy like Montel Garner if he makes himself uncuttable to Danny Smith.
Yeah. So I think that it's important to note because, you have those spots open. But, we have seen cornerbacks get hype in the past. Kevin Fogg last year was the big name who didn't even make the practice squad. So a long ways to go, but I thought that was an interesting nugget.
All right, give me a third nugget come out of
not a ton. Here's I'll give you one, and I'm going to preface this by saying it's rookie minicamp, so guys play out of position, and because your roster numbers are certainly not what they are going to be with your 90-man roster. But I saw one clip of Tyreek McCord playing inside linebacker. I don't know what that means. Again, it could be just out of position because it's rookie minicamp. You need bodies, but could you see McCord somehow play inside?
Well, I think this kind of goes back to me and David talking initially about the undrafted free agents. Mm-hmm. And when you go back, I don't know how much film you've seen on McCord since he's been signed, but he was a guy that played off the ball quite a bit.
Yeah, I just did while you were gone, I did the report on him, and they moved him all around. I think 2015 he was playing a little bit more off the ball, but he's played, hand down, left end, right end, outside linebacker, left, right side, playing with his hand up. He's played off ball. He's gone over the slot, so – he was used in a lot of different ways. I think most people think of him as an outside linebacker, but maybe the team has different ideas.
And wasn't he a former – was he the one that was a former safety?
No, that was Travis Feeney.
Okay, okay. Here's the thing that caught my eye with McCord. Yes, he was moved around quite a bit. You didn't see a lot of him as an edge rusher, though, in what I saw.
I thought he was used, you know, he was moved all around. He did get time at edge rusher, but it was not his primary spot.
He kind of closely resembles the skill set of a Terrence Garvin.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I took a lot of crap for the, if you would go back and look at the McCord thing, because I wasn't too, I didn't say enough glowing things about him. But I think he's got a nice first step. I think he is very versatile. I just think he's a stiff guy that struggles to bend, and his hand use is limited. He's a very underdeveloped pass rusher. And if they want to use him as a pass rusher, he's got a long way to try to improve in that regard.
And I, by no means, have my McCord posters arrived for me to hang up in my new office here either, because he really didn't jump out on tape at all to me. Now, here's the thing. Immediately after he was signed, I said, I'm guessing they're going to view him as an outside guy. Then I think the next thing is after more tape that I watched, I said, I don't know. They played off the ball quite a bit. Maybe he's going to be an inside guy. Now, I don't know what you saw as far as tape, the highlights that came out of rookie minicamp, but I did see him working with the outside, with Joey Porter and the outside linebacker groups.
Okay.
During drills. Now, if you saw him doing some drills inside, perhaps as a guy that we're just, and I think I said as much to David, a week and a half or so ago, is like, it's going to be interesting to see, where they ultimately view this guy as being, because he did move around so much. An intriguing guy, but in the grand scheme of things, a guy that we would both be shocked made the final 53.
Agreed. But in this pretty, weak undrafted class the Steelers had, he might be one of the two biggest names out there, and that's why I wanted to bring him up.
All right. One other thing, and I really, kind of trying to get myself settled here, and all, I haven't been able to really research this. My understanding that Travis Feeney wasn't a full go at minicamp.
I don't know if I heard a lot about that. Was there an injury that I missed or something?
No, and I think it's some scattered reports, and I don't think it's conclusive that he did miss time, but I think there's some out there saying that he might have missed some time. And if he did, then, and that's a big if he did, then it would probably be related to the off-season hernia.
Yeah, you're right.
Surgery that he had. Maybe they just didn't. And look, it's not like they were doing a lot there anyway, running around in football and shorts. But maybe it just tightened. Maybe he just missed some snaps to tighten this.
Yeah. Or it could just be a conditioning thing. I don't know when the last time he got to work out was, since he's recovering from that hernia.
That's true as well. A guy that definitely a guy that's going to be fun to watch during training camp, because I think you're dealing with a guy that did not play at 100% last year, and if he did, it was probably early on in the season. A guy that still put up pretty decent numbers at the combine despite having the sports hernia, and then a guy who was unable to participate at his pro day due to having hernia surgery. Now, I'm not sure. Did you see the sacks? Not that you can judge a guy just off the sacks alone, but did you see the compilation of sacks from last year that I posted on him?
Yeah, I remember looking, skimming through it. I don't think it was anything super impressive. I mean, as relatively speaking, sacks are still sacks, but it wasn't like, wow, this guy is a fantastic pass rusher.
And that was really that's what I came away with as well, was I think there was a couple that were kind of maybe covered sacks or quarterback holding on to the football a little bit as well. So you can definitely understand why a guy like him fell as far down as he did during the draft. Right now, though, you would still, and I think it's a Captain Obvious statement, a guy like Anthony Ciccolo has to be ahead of him right now.
I think to start, but I think they're all getting thrown into the pile, and it's going to be a real competition. I mean, honestly, Dave, you're looking at 10 linebacker spots, and you could name, I think, at minimum 11 guys that are going to be, that have a great case to make this team. And that doesn't even count Jordan Zumwalt or L.J. Ford. So you got 11 guys, 10 spots, someone's not going to get a rose, and it's going to be a real fun battle to see who really deserves that last spot.
And let's be honest here. I don't think we really know what Fort is in the Steelers' eyes.
Right. I mean, yeah, you know, he got a cup of coffee last year. He was with the team all last year, played a little bit on special teams. But, I mean, I don't even consider him part of that 11, neither do I with Jordan Zumwalt. So they have to really now do something to get ahead of everybody, to get ahead of Chickalo, Feeney, Matakevich. That's a big uphill battle.
I can't remember. You're not a card-carrying member of the Jordan Zumwalt fan club, are you?
not at all. And neither is Mike Tomlin with the Money Pit nickname. I don't think there's anyone card-carrying Jordan Zumwalt.
Oh, they exist out there. You go back on Steelers Depot last year, there's a section of the fan base that definitely thought this kid could be the next starter inside there. His tape says otherwise. His college tape, at least.
His injury report says otherwise. And
can't keep himself healthy on top of it. Now, I think you wanted to talk a little bit about the youth and the depth of the cornerback position, right?
Yeah, just real briefly. You know, I did a quick article up for this morning, you know, and I understand depth is never going to be perfect, and it can always be theoretically better. If you had great depth, you probably have starters, is kind of the way I think of it. But I am worried about some of the inexperience in the secondary. You look at safety, you know, it looks like Sean Davis is going to be the backup everywhere. I can't imagine Shamarco's going to get that chance again. You know, a corner, you have, you know, Golson, who's going to be your nickel starter, who's never played a snap. Artie Burns, never played a snap. Duran Grant, one snap in his career. I'll ask you the question, how much concern do you have with the inexperience of one of those guys gets pressed into action? You know, or is there a level of concern there with you?
Obviously, yeah. As Mike Tomlin would like to say.
I mean, there's talent. I mean, I don't deny that, but you know,
Brandon Boykin just tweeted an hour ago. I don't know how I missed this. Hashtag slot cornerback lives matter.
Oh my goodness!
At least he has a sense of humor.
Yeah. You're gonna tweet back to him? Don't do it! Don't do it! I'm gonna have to turn that computer off.
No, I retweeted it with an LOL. I think just now. I just caught that. You know, outside of Gay and Gay and Cockrell.
Yeah.
Cockrell
is the second most experienced cornerback on this team, so that's kind of to put a bow on it. You know how young this group is.
Is he not getting enough respect?
Cockrell?
Right.
I think people have to understand that he's going to get better, that he's going to get – this is his first chance to go through an OTAs and go through a training camp and really sit and learn about this defense. And I've said this 100,000 times, but I think it's worth repeating. I don't think his ceiling is incredibly high. I think at best he's a number two corner. He's never going to be a number one guy. I don't see the physicality that – you normally associate with a Pittsburgh Steeler cornerback, but I think he's a guy that really held his own for getting thrown into the fire last year, and I'm excited to see him take that next step forward now that he has time to learn and really grasp this defense.
Here's the thing, too, with him. I think his football IQ helps make up for several of his deficiencies.
Yeah, I think he's a smart guy. I think he plays with good technique, and I give Carnell Lake credit to that. I think Carnell Lake, for maybe the faults that he has, does a great job of developing technique and playing clean and you know, getting yourself in the right position. At least. But my point isn't to talk about Ross Cockrell in terms of is he good or bad, but just he's the second most experienced guy on this roster with one season playing, you know, football on Sundays in the NFL. And everyone else behind that is a pretty big unknown.
Would you consider still watching the waiver wire here for a guy?
You know, I was in favor of adding a veteran corner really from the start. And I guess the reason why I wrote that post and noted that special note about the youth in the secondary was to say that I am a little surprised that they didn't get a veteran safety or they didn't get a veteran corner. I mean, I guess you could call Donald Washington, you know, as now that veteran corner. He's 29 years old. He's played in the NFL for 30-some-odd games. And I know at safety, Will Allen's always going to be on speed dial. But I am a little surprised seeing just how young and how, you know, no football reps – that you have in depth at corner and safety. I am surprised they didn't go out and grab somebody.
All right, let's end the show on this note here. And I wrote about this Sunday evening based on a you know, it's 'tis the season for rankings.
Mm-hmm.
right now. And for those that read the site and have in the past, please know that a lot we'll be recapping as far as major media stuff moving forward right now. It'll be rankings of this, rankings of that, just because, I mean, it gives us something to discuss and gives the reader something to discuss. And believe it or not, you get some good discussion out of some of these rankings. And Chase Goodbread of NFL.com released his top 100 rookies of 2016 based on who he believes will make the biggest impact during their first seasons in the league. The Steelers' top three draft picks are Artie Burns, Sean Davis, and Javon Hargrave. None of them cracked his top 40. I don't think I had the shocked face when I read that. With that said, Artie Burns ranked 44th overall, Sean Davis 60th overall, and two spots behind him, Javon Hargrave. Now, all these weeks, all these few weeks now removed from the draft, and now having an opportunity to go back and watch extensive film on all three of these guys now, outside of really Hargrave, because it's still so hard to find a lot of his tape, out there. I think I found one or two extra games off of the torrents of his. But of these three guys now, I am a lot more comfortable with Sean Davis than I was on draft day, for starters. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I think at the end of the first half of the 2016 season, I think Sean Davis has the opportunity of contributing the most and having played the most amount of defensive football snaps.
Yeah,
thoughts?
Yeah, I would actually, the list that you gave out, what was his name, Chase Goodbread?
Is it Goodbread? Is that how it's pronounced?
I just forget what his name was, but whatever, his Chase from NFL.com.
Right.
I would actually flip that list entirely in terms of what I see as projected year one impact. I would have Hargrave the highest, I would have Sean Davis second, and I would have Artie Burns third. Because even if Hargrave doesn't get the nose tackle job right away or splitting time with Daniel McCullers, you're definitely getting an impact in your nickel defense. And the Steelers, of course, are going to be nickel 70% of the time, or at least sub-package nickel and dime. So you're definitely going to get an impact, I think, from there. I think Sean Davis can come in right away and has a pass to play with that dime package that you get, what Robert Golden did at the end of last year. And Artie Burns might not have a pass to play right away. Unless he can beat out Ross Cockrell for that left cornerback job, he's not going to have a pass to play, and he's not going to make an impact on defense until that happens.
Let's go ahead and suppose Hargrave manages to beat out Daniel McCullers by week one.
Okay.
That's not – even though, you know, there's a chance that might not happen, there is a legitimate chance that that could happen.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. So, how, you know, we're talking 18 snaps a game for that, right?
Nose tackle. Yeah, I could do the quick math, but, yeah, that's good enough. 18 I'll take.
Okay, so let's go 18 there. Let's also say let's suppose, and this is a big assumption here, week one of the season, he's allowed to rotate in, a few plays a game as a nickel pass rusher. Now, that's a stretch by week one, but let's go ahead and assume that happens. On average, through the first half of the 2016 season, he would be doing good to get six snaps a game in those situations, right?
I think he'd play a little bit more nickel, to be honest with you. If you're looking to get Hayward into it at about 80% of the time, if you play 65 snaps a game, I think you probably have around 10 to 15 snaps for someone else to fill in at. So I could see him get maybe 10 snaps in nickel and, 15 or so at nose a game, so 25 maybe a game.
Wow. I mean, when you, and that's where I was going with this, was going to add up the total amount of snaps that we could see him, the ceiling for him possibly playing in the first half of the season. 25 snaps seems like a lot of snaps for him, doesn't it?
Well, when you're
in the first half of the season. Now, in the second half, you could twist my arm and say, oh yeah, I could probably see that.
Well, when you're a versatile guy like Hargrave, he was brought in partially for his versatility and his ability to play in any front that you need him to. So it's not like his competition is fierce. It's Ricardo Matthews, it's LT Walton, it's Keshad Lyons. Those aren't household names.
So you're saying eight times? Let me take my shoes off here.
200. 25 times eight.
Yeah, 200 snaps in the first eight games of the season.
Roughly.
Okay. Let's take 10% of that off.
Okay.
So and go 180. Over or under?
I mean, I'll.
Let's even make that number a little bit more interesting by deducting five more snaps from it, going 175 snaps over under for him.
I mean, if we work with the assumption that he's beaten out McCullers, which is how we started this conversation, then I'll take the over on that one. If he doesn't, then of course it's probably going to come in under.
I'm going to go under, even if he wins it. I think he's going to be a slower transition into that nickel. Then I think he's eventually going to get there. I just think it might be a little bit slower transition. On top of it, I don't think Hayward and Tour are going to be wanting to get off the field that early, that early in the season.
Well, the point is to do that early in the season to save them from themselves. You don't do it week 16 when they're already worn out and you've defeated the purpose of the idea.
But here's the thing though. I just don't think that from an X's nose and I don't think Mitch will be ready to turn him loose.
I think he's going to be more transitioned to go into a nickel front than he's going to be in that traditional nose spot, because I think the nickel more one-gap pass rush is what he did at South Carolina State. That two-gapping hold the point of attack is going to be, I think, a harder thing for him to adjust to than nickel snaps.
I guess what I'm getting at is I see Ricardo Matthews stealing some of those snaps early.
No, I mean, that's fair. Yeah, we are still talking about a third-round kid from an FCS school, and that is a big adjustment, no doubt.
Right. Now, it would not hurt my feelings to be 100% wrong. This guy just kick ass. You know?
Okay. So let me ask this question to you real quick then. Do you see Davis or Burns getting more snaps than Hargrave?
Well, see, that's where I was. Yeah. Now, definitely not Burns. Right. People know how I feel about that. I would be surprised if he gets 100 snaps in the first eight games, to be quite honest with you, talking about Burns.
Mm-hmm.
Barring injury, of course. Now, Davis is a guy that's going to be interesting to see how they attack this sub package this year. Mm-hmm. Are we going to see some? Here's my hope, and you tell me if this is your hope as well too. Mm-hmm. My hope is that we see a lot of big nickel in this thing, pulling Timmons off the field for a guy like Sean Davis.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they did last year, you know, and if Davis is able to pick things up and be trusted, then, yeah, on third and long or obvious pass situations, you know, two-minute drill, you could see that. And I think they could get Davis, you know, that's going to be his path to playing time. That's his best path.
Now, let me ask you this. Would you end the sub-package there? Would your only sub-package move be to pull – And this goes back to Hart, and this is where it's going to get real interesting as far as this defense goes this year, and especially if you have a guy like Hargrave that can contribute on as a three down player right out of the chute this year. Mm-hmm. Would you be tempted to pull only Timmons off the field in sub package situations, or would you be tempted to pull the nose and Timmons in lieu of a corner and a safety?
Oh, you're losing me for a second here. I think that you're going to see definitely third and long. You're going to see that dime package. So it's going to be a 2-3-6 front, which is your dime personnel, six defensive backs. And I think the question you were asking, and this is a great question, is this going to evolve to more than just obvious pass situations, the way that we've seen other teams start to gravitate towards it? And I don't have a good answer for that. I'm really dying to know. I can't wait to find out. Because we also realize is that Timmons is going into the last year of his deal. Vince Williams is going into the last year of his deal. Do the Steelers want to help start make this transition to this dime defense? I have no idea. I'm not trying to sway anyone either way. But it's going to be a really interesting component, because if they don't, then they got to find out a potential replacement for 2017.
Yeah, but I mean, you would not be tempted into having really your only, and it really wouldn't be a sub package change. I guess I worded that wrong, because you're just what it would be pulling Timmons off for a basically another linebacker, which Sean Davis would be playing in the box.
Yeah, are you saying 2-3-6 front? Is it defense?
I'm talking about leaving your nose tackle on the field
so
if you can get out of the
pass. 3-3-5?
Right.
Oh, yeah, I know a lot of people have tried to talk about that. And I don't deny that you might see some wrinkles in there, but I think the evidence that that's going to happen is pretty slim. It does occasionally happen around the league. I think people think it doesn't happen in the NFL. I've seen some teams do it, but that's a little out there.
Yeah, and it is out there. Yeah. But I mean, if you have a guy like Hargrave who can get after the, who we think might be able to get out after the passer as a one gap nose tackle, there goes the train.
Yeah, I was trying to. I was hoping it wouldn't come before the podcast ended. Sorry about
that. But do I think that's going to happen? No, I think you're just going to see some big nickel where, in other words, your nose and Timmons comes off. Yeah. In lieu of an extra corner and an extra safety, and that's what you're thinking as well,
right? Yeah, I you call that big nickel, I just call that dime. I would call big nickel that 3-3-5 if you were to put Sean Davis as that fifth guy. But here's the other thing, a reason why I prefer a 2-3 or two down front instead of the 3 down front is I like the versatility of your 2 down front more than the 3 down front. The 3 down front, you can't adjust to motions as well. You can't adjust to, you can't be as creative with your blitzes and stuff like that with guys coming off the edge and things like that. So I think that's a big reason why we don't see that 3-3-5 in the NFL is because I think it's harder to deal with some of the motions. I think it's harder to stop the run in some ways. And I think you're not as flexible in terms of how you can, draw up and window dress your blitzes.
And the thing is, too, if you wanted to get cute about it, you could really call it a penny, right?
Yeah, I mean, the terminology is, you could call it 100 different things. I mean, I've heard penny referred to, some people.
Because technically that's another two extra corners, right?
I was just reading about, I was going back and reading about Denver's penny defense, and I can't remember. It was their base 3-4 with three corner, or what was it? Oh, okay. It was their base 3-4 with an extra corner, and so they took a safety off, if that makes any sense.
Right.
I'm losing myself here. We're rusty. Getting back to it.
But, I say that because of Sean Davis having the traits of a corner.
But I think they're going to really have Davis focus on safety this year. For a rookie, let's come in, let's learn one position, the position that you're looking for long term. And let's not have your mind going a couple different ways trying to learn how
right,
to play.
Right. I'm not suggesting him playing corner. I'm just saying he has the traits that you could line him up as a safety in a box and then still put him in the slot to cover.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. I get
from that. Yeah. Because, obviously we're going to see that this year. He's going to be lined up on a tight end or a slot receiver at some point.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
As they said after the draft, they're going to start him off. He's most of his time is going to be spent in the box. True.
Yeah, the dime safety gets moved around a little bit, but I think that you want to have your veterans playing out in space and taking away the deep ball.
But it does it, and I guess we'll kind of end on this. It does set up, and you can see why some people starting to think this way with a 3-man front on sub package where it. Depending on how these guy like Hargrave and Davis fit into this defense and able to function on second and long, third and long situations, it makes it harder for opposing offenses to dictate to you if you have that kind of versatility.
Yeah, I don't deny that you might see a little bit of that, but I just don't think you're going to see it a lot. I don't think the evidence is really even there right now to say that they will do that. I think, yeah, theoretically you could do that, but theoretically you could create this offense and this defense in a lot of different ways and just go crazy about it.
The good thing is if you got into a situation like that, regardless of whether or not opposing offense went big or small against you personnel wise, you have Davis, which really is like a linebacker that can play in the slot and corner as well too.
Yeah, no, he's a great chess piece to have. He's gonna do a great job of being able to combat some of these mismatches teams want to put you in. They want to flex the tight end out wide in space. You can put Sean Davis over him now. They want to do two tight end sets. They can do 12. That's what New England did last year. They ran 12 personnel, but they would go bunch and run it up, down your throat, or they would spread you out and go empty. Then you're trying to defend that. Very, very difficult to do, and I think if you have a guy like Sean Davis, because you can use him in so many different ways, that's going to do a great job of combating just some of the mismatches offenses try to put you in.
Now, let me bring this all the way back home again. And the whole reason I kind of got off on this is because the more I've kind of watched on Sean Davis, the more I not only understand the pick, but I like the pick a lot more. Do you feel the same, or do you feel the same as you did on draft day about Sean Davis as you do now?
Well, I was pretty happy on draft day. So, I've obviously thought about it more, and that's probably made me warm up to it. But I liked it from the get-go, and I still do. So I guess my thoughts really have not changed a ton.
So by week nine, after the first eight games, you still think Javon Hargrave has a better chance of playing more snaps than Sean Davis?
I think it's a simple numbers thing. I think if Davis is only uses that, you know, third and long pass, you know, dime package player, then he's going to get about 10 to 15 snaps a game. And I could see Hargrave get between, you know, 20 and 25. So from a pure, you know, path to play time standpoint, I think Hargrave gets more. I mean, how many snaps a game do you think Davis could get?
I think he could get. I think he might could get 15 right out of shoot.
Yeah, but if Hargraves is getting, you know, every what's the quick math on this?
Well, what do we say? One. Let's go to 175.
I mean, you took the under on 175, right? So let's just assume it's 150 over the first 8 weeks. That's almost 19 snaps a game.
And 175 is 22 snaps a game. I don't think he's going to get that. Right. So if we went 150 divided by 8,
18.75.
Okay.
That's still more than Davis.
Yeah, but I think Davis could be a guy that could get 15, maybe to 20. Let me put it to you this way. I would not be surprised if the two were separated by about 75 snaps.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just really interested to see how if this dime package evolves or if it stays where it did last year.
And I hope it does.
It'll be interesting, yeah.
We both agree that Artie Burns is likely to have the least amount of snaps of those three players come midway point.
The only way for him to get play time is to beat out Ross Cockrell, and I think Cockrell's got a big step ahead of him.
All right, for those of you that saw the post on Sunday, I have all the Artie Burns targets down on paper, and I'm now converting those into compilation tapes. I had the first one up of Burns' first four games of the 2015 season, along with the stats to go along with it. I'm going to be posting these in groups of four. A, it's easier on me to do it that way, and B, I think it can create more discussion along the way on top of it. Alex, you got anything for us to wrap up with here?
No, I think we're out of time. I'm going to go catch that train. And
All right, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Cedars Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow Alex Kozora at Alex underscore Kozora. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, go to cedarsdepot.com and hit the donate button. Say a prayer for Toby. Everybody's diabetic, starting insulin today, so that's another challenge for us here at the Cedars Depot Metroplex. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.